is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Outloud here. Well, from the Afghanistan debacle to America's highest court on the Texas abortion ruling, surely Americans are at odds on about everything. We're seeing Biden's approval numbers plummet in the wake of 13 U.S. troops being killed at the Kabul airport. But it goes much deeper than that, friends, as the economy is showing signs of collapse, inflation, the looming energy crisis, and Washington's answer to all of this, well, is to spend more money, creating mountains of debt. So this is a crisis unto itself as well. There is a lot to talk about today, and we're going to get right started here. I want to talk about Afghanistan, and we'll do it with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He's the president of the London Center for Policy Research and a CIA-trained intelligence operations officer, 35 years of experience in global and national security. Always great to have Colonel Schaefer here with us. Let's talk about pulling those troops out of Afghanistan. All right. Was it the right or the wrong thing to do? Now, let me just lay something down here with you here. We have troops all over the world. I mean, we have troops in lots of places, and it's not, and I want to preface here, it's not to nation build. I mean, I don't think any of us are for that specifically, but it's to have strategic relationships, and it's to secure peace in many of these areas. And quite frankly, it gives us eyes and ears in a lot of these markets. Now, this was very controversial in Afghanistan. After 9/11, we put troops there for strategic reasons, and it was initially bin Laden and all that, but it was also not to give harbor to these safe haven to these terrorist groups. So I'm questioning at this point if this was really the right thing to do. We had the country secured with about 2,500 troops. I know that both the Trump administration and Biden wanted to get our, our boys and girls out of there. I mean, I get it. But I'm not sure it was the right thing to do. What do you say to all that?
So, yeah, I like the way you framed it, Malcolm. First off, most countries we're in today are, as you point out, a cooperative relationship where we're either training or working with them. And I'd like to remind the audience that places we've invested in regarding security, places like Japan, Germany, South Korea, we've never left, nor should we. The idea is that we are there as allies and friends. And frankly, it's in those countries' interests, as in our interest, to maintain a strong cooperation for purposes of collective security. Within the context of Afghanistan, no doubt we should have, quote unquote, left the nation building mission, which I think many of us recognize was folly. Malcolm, you're not going to change 2,000 years of cultural momentum mm-hmm. where the people of Afghanistan have no tradition of a central democracy. You're just not going to change that. And had we stayed there for another 10 years, had we put in 1 million troops, the moment we decided to pull out again, the same result would have happened. And plus, the idea was to, the Trump plan was not to, quote unquote, leave. The idea was to leave the Afghan people to sort out their own political issues. That is to say that we were going to cease our work as the Praetorian Guard and guarantor of the Afghan government's ruling over the country. We're going to step away and let the Taliban, the warlords, the tribal leaders and the Afghan people to pick whatever path they wanted without us deciding it for them. And the plan was to maintain between 3,000 to 5,000 special operations and intelligence collection assets on the ground, probably. And the idea was to maintain a level of influence and operations that was most logical and linked to our offensive counterterrorism operations. There was never any intention in the Trump plan to just walk away. And that's what Biden essentially did. And Malcolm, let me remind your audience, because we've been talking for quite a while now, I did a number of editorials over the 2019-2020 period, which pointed out that the inevitable outcome of a Biden presidency would be chaos when it came to national security. And unfortunately, as demonstrated by his departure and abandoning the Trump plan, having no plan adequately in place to replace it, what we've seen is the utter failure of the inevitable, use of Biden's lack of concern or focus on national security.
Yeah, perfectly said, I think. And I think what we've got to look forward to now, and I guess the question really becomes, Tony, I mean, isn't this a real setup for terrorist activities? I mean, you talk about what the initial role was after 9/11, but this right. surely gives safe haven. I mean, this is more than just a caliphate now. This is a whole damn country. They've got to strategically manipulate and to plan accordingly these strikes. They've made it very clear in recent days by saying they want the U.S. to stay out of their affairs. They want the U.S. to stop talking about human rights and the way they treat women. They have no plans to change it, they say. But I think the bigger question here is really their outreach and what they plan to do around the world. We don't have a lot to look forward to here. It's not like we're going to go back into Afghanistan tomorrow. There's just no appetite for that clearly right now. So the outcome is going to be, I think the futures, I get a sense, Tony, anyways, it's not going to be pleasant. I think we're going to begin to see far more terrorist activities and attacks really throughout the world. Is that what we have to look forward to?
So by the complete incompetent Biden administration's own failure, the Taliban is now within the top 10 military powers on the planet because of all the military hardware we gave them.
Wow.
There's no way, Malcolm, no way that gear is not going to be used against us or our allies. That's going to happen. And despite what the Pentagon says about them trying to basically make things inoperable, they didn't do that. And all that's going to come back at us by the fact that some of it's being sold to the Iranians, some's being sold to the Chinese. But inevitably, it's going to be used to arm organizations that will be targeting U.S. Interests, U.S. forces, and our allies. So it's going to happen. It's just going to happen. And this is where I do believe this level of incompetence by the Biden administration is impeachable. And let me just say, I think that we have to understand that this is a great compromise of our international interests to the point of where, and we're going to talk about the Ghani phone call in a minute, but I'm just saying, Malcolm, right here with the massive loss of all this gear, knowing, and there was top secret code word intelligence being given to the administration to include the president himself back in June and July, saying the moment we leave and we have no plan to control the gear, the moment the country is going to fall. So this to me is a high crime. And let me just say that clearly. There's no gray area here. That was a high crime because of the level of knowledge that this would inevitably be the outcome of what happened.
Yeah. You know, I got to stay on that one moment here with you, Tony, because this really, I mean, it befuddles the mind for all of us. I mean, it's hard to put this into context, what you're just talking about. And I wanted to talk about all this massive equipment and armor we've left there. Is it really incompetence? Because I have a hard time understanding that not only would a United States president, Tony, and an administration and a cabinet and military leaders and generals and others would even come close to leaving this sort of thing behind anywhere. I mean, it goes against every common decency of perspective for our national security. Is it really incompetence, or is there something else happening here? Because it looks to many of us that they are setting this up for almost like they're in partnership with these cats. I mean, what is it?
So, look at the optic of this, Malcolm. At the 20-year mark after 9/11, we have rearmed and made more powerful than ever the very enemy we wanted to vanquish in 2001. Think about that.
Yeah.
Who does that? And so this, the folks on the inside who talk to me still, actual serving intelligence officers and military officials, are telling me the same thing you just said. It appears to them this was no accident.
Yeah.
And the reason they're saying that is because everything you're seeing, we're seeing, they see in more detail and they have better intelligence. So I'm just telling you that, yes, it appears to those with a trained eye, informed eye on the outside, and those on the inside who are trying to basically work not impartial, completely impartial, non-political officers who have to have taken the oath of office are telling me that the appearance is this was not incompetence. This is decision-making, that indicated that Biden knowingly allowed this to happen, which refers back to my belief that this is impeachable and he should be removed from office because this has done grave damage. And I'm going to say this may get me in trouble. I think this is just the beginning. It's going to get worse.
Yeah, no, I reported on that the other day. I hear those sentiments exactly. This is the beginning of something. And I have a bad feeling in my gut as well. We're headed in a very bad area here. It's not a good feeling. I want to talk about the Taliban again, specifically this, Tony. They're attempting now to put some sort of a government together, whatever the hell you want to call it. And the word is that they're looking for legitimacy, I guess, around the world. Here's what I want to ask you. Do you think governments will recognize them? And furthermore, will our own U.S. government end up recognizing them as a legitimate government of Afghanistan?
So we have to remember that the reason they're here and they had such force behind them is two reasons. First off, the Biden administration's mistakes regarding departure from the Trump plan. The people who jumped in behind that to take advantage are the Chinese. So the moment the Chinese saw that they could get in and help the Taliban, they did so. So the first people who are going to recognize the Taliban are the Chinese. Chinese are going to gain great advantage by allowing to use the Taliban as a proxy. And by the way, they're going to take full advantage by getting the rare earth minerals that they need for their Chinese economy. It's already happened. So I think inevitably those who are aligned with China are going to recognize very rapidly the Taliban rule and are going to leverage it. So that's it. That's what's going to happen. Will the rest of the world go along? I don't know. I think there's some real issues regarding some states not wanting to go along and recognizing a terrorist organization, which basically treats women as second-class citizens and will begin killing gays and lesbians. There's a real disconnect here, Malcolm, between Western civilization, liberal democracies who promote women's rights, gay rights, transgender rights, all that stuff. They're going to have a hard time recognizing a government which basically says women don't exist as equals to men and homosexuals are going to be killed. So I don't know if the Western civilizations, the Western countries are going to sign up to recognizing that anytime in the near future.
Yeah. Well, it's been historically noted that they throw gays off the roofs to kill them.
Yep.
I mean, this has been noted throughout that area and in the Middle East as well. You're exactly right. It's remarkable how many people will look the other way when it comes to these sort of principal points you say here for other reasons. It is remarkable. The United Nations, by the way, I want to make a footnote here, said it will convene an international aid conference in Geneva on September 13th to help avert what the UN Secretary General says is a looming humanitarian catastrophe in Afghanistan, meaning that they're looking for economic help and support. So it looks to me, Tony, like we're going to begin to help the West now, is going to begin to help the enemy, which is what they're looking for, and with all kinds of treasure, I'm guessing, but not a good feeling I have about that either, huh?
Right. No, you're right. The United Nations is tone deaf to the evil it's about to support. The Taliban have made it very clear that they intend a caliphate that is very much based on Sharia. If you look at the terms of Sharia, Sharia is very severe regarding anyone who is an apostate or someone who is a non-member of their religion. And remember, a lot of the people who are most vigorously attacked by the Taliban are other members of Islam. They are all about killing anybody or subduing anybody who doesn't by their very specific form of Islamic belief. So the UN supporting the Taliban is simply going to double and triple down on their ability to murder and kill others who do not believe like they do.
And that ideology we're talking about right now will never change. I mean, that right. that is built into these people, has been for last 1,400 plus years. Again, the way I reference the Taliban today is they are barbarians. You'd have to go back to the 7th century to find these kinds of evil creatures. I equate this to hell on earth, basically, is what these people are. I want to talk to you about the stranded Americans now. I know you've got a lot to say about this, and I would imagine you probably have your hands in here somewhere, knowing you. And again, I haven't talked to you about this, but all right. So the Taliban are going door to door looking for Americans and our Afghan partners. And this is to torment some, rape women, kill others in front of their families. I mean, this is horrific what's really going on. We have retired special ops. In fact, I've been talking to them in generals in the last several days on the program. We're going to try to secure the safety of some of these people that are stranded. Now, of course, Zaki and company come out to say, oh, nobody's stranded. But that's been their talking point right from the beginning. I don't know. You have any idea how many we have stranded out there? And what are the chances? What's the lowdown on this? Because, you know, trying to get any of these people out of there, I think, has got to be, a huge task, Tony, with, you know, this landlocked country and really no connection in there. What's the latest?
So, yeah, so as you speculate, yes, London Center is working in conjunction with others on this issue. Well, I can't get into specifics because of the very reasons you just specify. We have to be careful in how we discuss how we're doing the recovery and rescue. So, by the way, we're always looking for contributions from folks. People can go to londoncenter.org and make a contribution because we are involved. It's not cheap to buy aircraft, just hinting there. Anyway, so the way it's being done is essentially, Malcolm, we have a group of individuals, a tapestry, if you will, of special operations and security professionals working on the ground to get people to safe havens. Those safe havens then are basically close to or incidental to airports where we can get aircraft in. The aircraft we get in then people are moved to other outside of Afghanistan locations to be moved to the West. So that's the scheme. I can't get to any greater detail than that, but there is a method to doing it. And according to the people I'm talking to on the ground, we're talking about over 2,000. Don't let the State Department lie to you. Mm-hmm. It's over 2,000 people. Citizens and probably another 2,000 to 3,000 green card holders who are authorized to return, and so that's the ground truth, Malcolm.
Yeah.
And by the way, our biggest obstacle, and I'm talking about from working on this pretty much full time the last 5 days of this week. Mm-hmm. Our biggest obstacle is the U.S. State Department. Mm-hmm. who literally is hanging up on people when they're trying to get authorization, coordination, or other legitimate support out of them to make sure that we get everybody out of Afghanistan. And it's and by the way, I think it's just a matter of time before the Taliban either starts grabbing people to hold them as hostages or starts killing people. The only reason they're on their best behavior right now is because we're benefiting them by giving them a great deal of propaganda support by covering them through the U.S. news media. So that's the situation, as I understand.
That's well said. And those numbers are some of the best numbers I've heard thus far, and I believe you're accurate. I mean, these numbers of a couple of hundred, 100 or 200 is absolutely ridiculous, and everybody should know that. And Anthony Blinken, I mean, many people are actually, completely calling for his resignation as well. I mean, he is a train wreck as far as a sectarian state goes. Is anybody, when it comes to the military and the generals and again, the State Department, as you say, I don't know that we get the sense anybody will be held responsible for this. It doesn't appear the administration is going to hold anyone responsible, or will they?
So this goes back to the point you and I spoke about, right? Was this incompetence or intentional? So the only thing I can conclude, Malcolm, is that if nobody gets fired, this was intentional. Think about it. I mean, everybody complains, but man, they seem to be very much committed to the course of action, to include, I watched Blinken's horrific press conference where he wouldn't address these issues directly. So you got to ask yourself, if it's incompetence, then why aren't people being fired? And if it's not incompetence, then it has to be intentional. And these people aren't going to be fired because they're carrying out the policy that Joe Biden wants carried out. So I think it's the latter, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about that phone call. This is really something else here now. Biden's call with President Ghani, it was all about the Afghan army collapsing. So the phone call was on July 23rd, and it was recorded that Biden was pressing again Ghani to change the perception that the Taliban was winning amid the growing conflict. Now, Jen Psaki, who's been dodging all the questions, I mean, she is something else at these briefings. She says, and I quote, "I'm not going to get into private diplomatic conversations or leaked transcripts of phone calls," she said at the briefing. Of course, they don't ever get involved in them unless they're Trump's calls, of course, then they'll be happy to get involved in those. But would you tell us your thoughts? I mean, where does this really go, and how egregious is this phone call with Ghani, you think?
So going back to my comments about impeachment, look, President Trump was impeached for the perception that he somehow wanted something from a world leader and offered something in return, quid pro quo. So in this case, it is clearly captured, and people, the Republicans I work with on the Hill, are calling for the full transcript. What we do see, what we've seen so far is, yes, it's very clear that first off, Biden, that call, Malcolm, is confirmation Biden knew that the military is going to fall. If you listen to that, he knew it. And secondly, then he was trying to basically get a world leader, in this case, President Ghani, to lie to benefit Biden's administration, to pretend that that things weren't as bad as they are. Those are the facts. And those, if you take the standard of impeachment applied to President Trump, Joe Biden should have articles of impeachment already being drawn up, because that's very clearly what happened. And then you combine that with what else happened afterwards. But in this case, we do know that Ghani was offered a bribe if he went along with what Joe Biden was asking him to do.
It sounds like that was the case, but I get the sense, you know, like everything else we've been talking about over the years, I got to tell you, Tony, I think most Americans realize that they seem to get a pass. Anything coming on the left on the from that agenda, nobody has ever held accountable. We haven't seen anybody held accountable for anything across the board. They get a full pass on all of it. And I would suspect they'll get it here as well, because the system seems to be set up for that. It's a pretty sad state of affairs, isn't it, buddy?
It is. No, I don't understand how our side, I'm speaking our side, is like the people who actually admire and support the Constitution.
Yeah, we call them patriots and constitutional lovers. That's
like
correct.
Anybody who actually wants to follow the rules is the enemy to the administration. Right. So our side being those who wish accountability to be handled appropriately are constantly flustered, and those who are in positions of authority don't seem to care. And I know Democrats who are equally flummoxed by this, because they see the damage as being done as well. But they also are being shouted down by those who I guess I could call them progressives. The progressive wing of the Democrat Party is completely committed to undermining all of national security. And then since they've got to cut up their upper hand, since a lot of the leaders are in place, you're not going to see any accountability, because essentially, they act constantly from a political position, not willing to accept ground truth or objective facts as usable. And so that's what we're left with, is people who act politically without regard to the consequences of their actions. And we're left with that until someone comes in to replace those leaders.
Yeah. You know, finally, we come to a head here, Tony, now when you've mentioned now a few times, and many are, about the impeachment or resignation or something of the president, Joe Biden. I think I need to mention, and I can hear listeners telling me and commenting after the fact to say, why didn't you ask? But let me just ask you, we've got we've got the midterms coming up here. We've got a lot of things happening in our country right now in regards to the Marxist left agenda that is being pushed and promoted heavily. And that's not to be a funny guy here. I mean, it's really happening. Just as we all feared, predicted, but feared as well. Now, if there was any reason Biden does not make it through, whether it's impeached, resignation, which will never happen, or whether he dies in office, What we've got to look forward to after that is obviously that number two on the ticket, which is really, many people believe, worse than Biden, which is Kamala Harris and her track record. All of their states were kind of set up for a tough couple of years here coming up before we get into the midterms and pass them, and then the presidential race in 2024. We're really at a tipping point in this country. You give me your thoughts on what I say there.
So, yeah, look, I'm one of those that says basically, and this may get me in trouble with your audience, burn it down. Look, it's not going to get any better. Let Kamala come in if that's the case. I would argue, you know, one of the things I've seen from there's a great scene in The Hunt for Red October where Captain Ramius is being torpedoed. And he's like, hey, you're driving into the torpedo. It's like, yes, I am. It's like, maybe it's better to just to drive right into it, to push them out, to force them to show how badly they intend to act, their bad intentions, to get it done. Sometimes it's like a Band-Aid. Sometimes it's better to just rip that Band-Aid off than rather to keep it there and do it slowly. So I'm one of those saying, bring it on. Let's deal with this as quickly as we can, because the longer we let them have power, the longer it lingers, the more damage they're going to do. So we need to get this done quickly. And if that means Kamala comes in and crashes, so be it. So I know that sounds harsh, but, you know, at this point, since the Republicans don't seem to be willing to act aggressively, then the only way you're going to get this done is to have them continue to be more and more obvious and what they're trying to do to damage the Republic and try to get more and more people awake to what's really going on.
Yeah, it's a moment. And we've been talking about this. I guess I'd say we're surprised, but I don't think we really are surprised.
No, Malcolm, we're not surprised. Others are surprised. We're not surprised.
Right. That's right. We've discussed and we knew what was happening here. You know, again, speaking of Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer here, and you know, Tony, I really appreciate always, let me just say to you, your candor and honesty in these kinds of things, I think is very, very compelling. And we really appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Malcolm, it's always a pleasure to join you. And I thank you for your clarity of thought as well. It is refreshing to have direct questions asked that I can answer.
Absolutely. Wow. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer there. Remarkable. Great, great talk. I'm just entirely pleased we could bring that all to you, friends. Now up next here, the Texas abortion ruling tells us a whole lot here. Danielle D'Souza-Gill will be joining us, and constitutional expert Paul Engel. A lot more to talk about here on Viewpoint this Sunday. Stay right there, friends. More program in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
You know, Healthy Cell is a terrific lineup of products. They have products that are pill-free, gel-pack vitamins. Looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cell health. Are you tired of being tired? Healthy Cell has a product that helps REM sleep, helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM sleep supplement. The only sleep supplement that's designed to support all stages of sleep. And boy, is it needed now during all the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic. So go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any product from Healthy Cell. I use them every day. I believe in them, and you should too. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutLoud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
I'm going to talk next about the Texas abortion ruling and what that tells us moving forward. I seen a tweet here I want to share with you that said, breaking news, and this was from Abby Johnson. She, if you remember, was the former Planned Parenthood director turned to pro-life advocate. And so she puts on Twitter, and I quote, "The Supreme Court decision is out. They will not interfere in the Texas heartbeat law. What an amazing victory. Babies win, life wins." Wow. Well, that got under the skin of a lot of people, to say the least, and we'll get into that now. And we're going to start off here with Danielle D'Souza Gill joins me. She is the author of The Choice, The Abortion Divide in America. And that book, by the way, is available in the America Out Loud bookstore, and you'll also see it on the front page of our network as you listen to Viewpoint this Sunday here. So we encourage you to take a look at that. She's also the host of a counterculture, it's called, with Danielle D'Souza Gill on the Epoch Times as well. Danielle, welcome to Viewpoint this Sunday. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's start here with the Supreme Court. This was a 5-4 ruling, came forward on Wednesday, and it denied a bid to stop Texas from banning abortions now after a fetal heartbeat is detected, okay? Now, this was a Senate Bill 8, known as the Texas Heartbeat Act, and it was signed into law by Republican Governor Greg Abbott in May. And what it is the law enabled private citizens, except for an individual who impregnated a woman through rape or incest now, to sue physicians or who perform abortions after that heartbeat is detected. So here's what I want to ask you, and this is really a 50,000 foot view here, but in the half century since Roe, there hasn't been really a court majority really predisposed to ruling against any abortion rights. I mean, this thing has been ironclad. In your opinion, Danielle, looking at this and having studied this abortion business a great deal with your book and all of that, is Roe versus Wade on the ropes right now?
Absolutely. I think the fact that the Supreme Court chose not to issue this emergency injunction regarding Texas shows that they're really going to look at Roe v. Wade very closely when they take up this Mississippi case in October, which is different. That's regarding 15 weeks, and the Texas one was regarding 6 weeks. But I think it just shows that Texas was so clever and really working around this and finding a way to get around Roe v. Wade. And I think that time has passed since Roe v. Wade. Technology has changed a lot. Back in the time of Roe v. Wade in 1973, they didn't have the advanced technology we have today with the ultrasound and hearing the heartbeat and knowing that the baby feels pain, all of that. So I think it absolutely needs to be revisited. And abortion advocates have really been freaking out over this.
Yeah, they have been. I mean, we're seeing it, and it's only starting right now. We'll talk about a lot of what they're doing and what their plans are to stop it. Because the one thing you can say, and I'll just say this about the Marxist left, is that when they don't get their way on arguments and decisions like this, they want to change the rules. Typically, they will want to, and that comes back to packing the Supreme Court and all of that, which we're hearing a lot of rumblings about. I want to talk to you a moment, Danielle, about the Wild West, let's call it here. And so Michael Moreland is a professor of law and religion at Villanova University. He identifies himself as a pro-life law professor. And he notes that the law is not just bizarre, but broad, what we're talking about here. He says there are all kinds of uncertainties in this statute. He says, pointing to a provision that says you can bring a claim if you know that someone intends to procure an abortion or aid and abet one. So this is where you're able to really sue somebody, and it could be anybody. It could be a neighbor. It could be somebody you vaguely know. It could be just about anybody. Now, anti-abortion groups are already asking on their websites for tips about those who are aiding or abetting abortions after about 6 weeks. It comes into the language of this thing. What do you think about this, Danielle? Is this kind of become kind of the Wild West? I mean, I give you an example. Cornell University law professor Michael Dorf says this is like an East German type society in which everybody is informing on everybody else. Does that set up for this kind of an environment?
Absolutely not. I think that we have way too much, uneasiness about all of this, because the reality isn't that it's you're calling on your friend or you're turning in someone you know. It's actually abortionists themselves. And the abortion doctor, or if we can even call them a doctor, since they don't save lives, they kill. But these abortionists, I mean, they know exactly what they're doing. They know the medical facts. And when they kill this child in the womb, they can see that they're doing that with the speculum or whatever it is with the procedure. So I think that holding them accountable, if they are continuing to do these abortions after 6 weeks, makes the most sense. And the fact that Texas was so smart to make it so that it's not the state that is really going after them, but other citizens, made it so that the Supreme Court wasn't able to intervene. Because if they had made it so that the state was the one policing this, then the Supreme Court probably would have intervened, just like how they have with other heartbeat bills and other things that have been passed. And whenever states pass these heartbeat bills, that's what the people want. They vote on this. Their legislators that they elected want this. And yet it's the Supreme Court that comes in and stops them from putting these laws into place that the people want. So I think the fact that the state of Texas took it away from the state really enforcing it and put it in the hands of the people was really the smartest, because that's how they were able to get around the Supreme Court.
Yeah, it strategically, thank you for saying that, because it tells people how Texas really was able to accomplish this, which was almost unthinkable, but yet they were able to pull it off with a result that surprised and shocked a lot of people. It is coming to sort of a showdown, though, in our country. Here's the thing, Danielle. If the Supreme Court, back to the Mississippi case you referenced just moments ago, the constitutionality of that in the 15 weeks, as you say. So if Roe versus Wade gets knocked down at the Supreme Court level, this would be, I mean, I can't even, my head is spinning to think about what the left would, they would go crazy. And you'd see an uprising from sea to sea, from edge to edge of this country. It would be an explosive moment. But here's the thing. Wouldn't all that mean that would be put down to states' rights? And some states, you know, a lot of blue states would immediately incorporate it into their rules and say, yeah, you come in and have an abortion anytime you want. We don't care. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many weeks or whatever. Very, very liberal Marxist sort of an agenda. And then your red states would say, no, no dice. I mean, in fact, right now, out of the Texas law, there are a lot of other states. I mean, Florida being right at the top of that, Arizona, others that are they want to model their programs right after Texas because they see they can get some results with this. What do you think about this federally with the Supreme Court and then states' rights on abortion?
Yes, every state should follow suit with Texas. I mean, most states in the country actually do want abortion restrictions. And most people, even just from polling, don't think that there should be late-term abortion. So if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it will go back to the states. It won't be that abortion is illegal throughout America or all of these things that the left acts like the world will end. It will go back to the states. And if Mississippi says, you know, 15 weeks, you have about 4 months to decide if you want to abort this baby, then that's what that state decides. Texas says, hey, it's the heartbeat, then that's what they'll do. And like you said, liberal states will probably have very radical pro-abortion laws up to the 9 month point or whatever it is that they decide. But I think the left, you know, they're already freaking out as if Roe v. Wade has been overturned. Rachel Maddow talked about this on her show about how this is what it feels like when Roe comes to an end right now. So really for the left, it's not about them having the ability to have an abortion or their states having the laws they want. For them, they want everyone to live by their rules. They don't want any state in the country to have abortion restrictions. For them, if there is any restriction at all, it's too much. They need to really advocate for no holds barred.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find this a very interesting moment in time right now, and it just comes at our country at an odd moment. But it is interesting because it'll really put in the spotlight again federalism, and it will come to what really should be governed by the federal government and what their role is in all this, and really the power of the states, which has really been at odds, which has created a runaway government in recent years and decades here. Danielle, stay right there. I've got a lot more I want to touch with you on right now. I want to bring on, though, right now, one of the smartest guys I know when it comes to the Constitution and ask him a couple of things. It's really about packing the Supreme Court and other things here. Author and speaker Paul Engle joins us. He spent more than, 20 years studying and teaching both the Bible and the U.S. Constitution. Now, his program, his daily show is called The Constitution Study. And it is heard right here at America Out Loud Talk Radio, 4 p.m. weekdays. You're one of the hardest working guys out there, Paul, when it comes to our Constitution and trying to right the wrongs. And we so appreciate all the work you're doing. Now, let me start here. So this vote was 5-4. The most conservative members of the court upheld the law, and many kind of wondered if that was going to happen, which is the 6-week period of time that bans abortions here. But almost as important as the result was how the court reached its decision. And I'm not hearing a lot about this. I want to talk to you about it. It was without full briefing and arguments before any court. Now, I want to educate folks a little bit about what this means. University of Texas law professor Stephen Vladek says this: we've seen the court 19 times already this term change the status quo from what the lower courts have done in every context, in a way that either allowed a state or federal policy to go into effect or that blocked it from doing so. Indeed, without full briefing or argument, without much explanation, the court has decided. Cases involving everything from the eviction moratorium to the remain in Mexico policy to state COVID-19 restrictions to the reinstitution of the federal death penalty. Wow. He says these cases are massively important, Vladek says. The extent to which the court is handing them down through a truncated and deeply invisible process really ought to concern even the people who think the court is getting the results right. Now, Paul, I thought that was quite something with Vladek coming out there. What do you say about all that, Paul?
Well, to me, that's a perfect example of hyperbole and rhetoric overcoming the facts of the actual case. The Supreme Court has not issued an opinion on this case. It has not examined the merits. All it has said is lower courts have they were requesting a stay to prevent this law from going into effect until it had worked its way through the courts for an actual opinion on the merits of the case. The district court said no, the circuit court said no, the Supreme Court said no. This is not an opinion of the case. This is not a decision about the merits of the case. The question was, did the appellants, those suing to overturn this, have such a compelling interest, or was the danger of not postponing this law so compelling that we had to put it on hold until the court had a chance to actually listen to it and make an intelligent decision. The court said no, they didn't see that there was a truly strong showing that the appellants would win, that women's whole health would win. They did not see irreparable harm by allowing babies to be killed while they were waiting to hear all of this. In fact, the court went on to say the actual request of women's health is so unique that we can't really touch this until we've had a chance to really think about what it is they are asking the court to do. So all of this this rhetoric and hyperbole and propaganda about Roe being overturned is pure nonsense. All the court has said is no, we don't see enough reason to put this law on hold until the courts have had a chance to determine.
All right. So let me ask you this now. Let me ask you this now with what you say there. So does this translate then to the fact that conservatives and patriots have been a little too enthusiastic too early, too quickly? And also, as I asked that question to Danielle up front, I'm going to ask to you, do you see this impact on the turnover of Roe versus Wade? Is this any indication overall that that can happen based on this decision?
Yeah, I actually think people on both sides, especially media and pundits, are completely overreacting to a simple procedural question about a stay on an injunction against people exercising this law. It's a complete overreaction. And I think it's meant to gin up emotion to get people to react to it based on the emotion of this rather than the actual facts of the case. Now, when it comes to Roe v. Wade, part of the problem with Roe v. Wade is Roe v. Wade, as it's portrayed in most media discussions today, is not the opinion that the court found. I've actually read the Roe opinion, and basically the opinion said that the Texas law at the time that said you could not have an abortion except to save the life of a mother was an infringement of the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. In other words, it deprived the doctor and the mother of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, the interesting thing is they were very interested about the rights of the mother and the liberty to go through with the abortion, not only decision, but with the abortion act under that due process clause, completely ignoring the life aspect of the child, depriving the child of their life without due process of law. Now, as Danielle mentioned, in 1972, when this case was argued and debated, mm-hmm. The imaging technology was not nearly as sophisticated as it is today. Hmm. Now we have a better understanding. And the big thing about Roe is Roe focused on the life of the mother, the health of the mother. It only cared about what they called potential life once the child in the womb was deemed to be viable. That was their standard. Once the child is viable, then they said the state has an issue in protecting potential life. Well, as science technology has improved, we recognize that there actually is life in the womb long before it is viable outside the womb, which is why the Mississippi law and the Texas law are very interesting. The Mississippi law is setting a date when they believe a child can be viable outside the womb, which would trigger Roe's requirement. Says, okay, once it's viable, then the state has an interest in protecting what they refer to as potential life, what I simply refer to as life. Whereas the Texas law says, well, how do we determine life? And, you know, you and me, you know, the first thing they do to check if we're alive is see if you've got a pulse. Mm-hmm. So if the child in the womb has a pulse, the assumption must be it's alive. Therefore, the state has an interest in protecting its right, making sure that it's not deprived of his or her life without due process of law, which is why the law also includes the emergency exception that says, listen, if there's a medical emergency, mm-hmm. then you don't have to worry about this law. You can't be sued if you induce an abortion while treating a medical emergency. emergency. That's also
so taking into consideration everything you're saying, then that there's, if I distill that information down, I think your suggestion, based on science, based on everything that's changed since the 70s, there's a high likelihood then that the court would rule differently the next time around. Is that correct?
It's from a legal standpoint, yes. From a medical standpoint, yes. From a political standpoint, it's still kind of iffy because, you know, I know people often refer to justices as conservative or liberal based on what president appointed them. But if I look at the way most of these justices come to their opinions, the way they vote on opinions, I'd say it's much more a 50-50 deal than it is a 6-3. If this happens, it's certainly going to be more likely a 5-4 than a 6-3 decision in either direction, because I'm pretty sure this case is going to end up at the Supreme Court sooner or later.
Okay.
I don't see any of the parties involved not appealing whatever decision happens originally at the district level and then at the circuit level.
All right. Before I talk about this other really important angle on this thing, I do not want to miss packing the court. I want to talk to both of you about that. But Danielle, let me ask you something on what Paul says there, please. And that is, and I hear what he says in the argument and all of that, but as he just stated as well, he up front, he said, well, you know, there are a lot of context, but yet public perception matters. And I think he just stated that at the end of what he's saying. Public perception matters. And you, with everybody up in arms about this right now because of the stakes, that could swing a motion and have an impact in this thing one way or another. Do you think?
Absolutely. And I also don't think that the chances of Roe v. Wade being overturned because of the Texas case is really that relevant, but really because of the Mississippi case, because in the Mississippi case, they are taking direct aim at Roe v. Wade. And so I think the fact that the court chose to take on that case shows that they have an intention of saying something regarding Roe v. Wade. Mm. Whether they will overturn it or not, I don't know. I think the Texas law comes from a much different angle than the Mississippi one. But I think even just looking at the Mississippi one, that itself is going before the court very soon. So we will have an answer on this soon. And I think that even if the court chooses not to overturn Roe v. Wade, let's say, we still have this workaround through what Texas figured out. Mm. So I don't think that will be a definitive end to this whole debate. I think this is going to be ongoing regardless. But as Paul is saying, I think, you know, Chief Justice Roberts, unfortunately, he has voted in the past in support of abortion. I mean, he, you know, issued that kind of siding with the liberals regarding the Texas law. So I don't think we can expect Roberts to be on our side. So if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it would be most likely 5-4. And even then, I'm not sure if we would get all of them because these newer judges appointed by Trump, I'm not 100% sure where they'll come out on this. Yeah. Although I do think that Alito and Clarence Thomas will likely vote to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, perfectly said, Danielle. That's a great setup. And you're right. I mean, everybody knows John Roberts is not a conservative hero by any stretch. I mean, he has let the Patriots down more than once in this country here. I've got to talk about packing the Supreme Court, because now what's happening here is there's a lot of talk and emotion coming from really the far left wing of the Marxist Democrat Party. That far left Marxist wing says, listen, okay, enough of this. Just add 4 or 5 more justices to the court and be done with it. The hell do you want? Or, you know, and there really is, they're simplifying the debate that way, which is really what they tend to do, Paul. When they don't get their way by the rules, they tend to change the rules. Talk a moment, because I want to get Danielle's opinion on this as well, about the danger of packing the court. And I think you're going to hear a lot more of this in the weeks ahead.
Well, court packing is nothing new. It actually goes all the way back to John Adams in 1800, this idea of packing the court. But we have to recognize that for the last 60 years, the major changes in American society were not passed by legislation. They were not done by the people of this country. They were done by the courts. So you have a progressive movement that has learned if you can't get your way through legislation, we'll get the court to impose it. And I find it ironic that the party that promotes this refers to themselves as democratic, yet wish to govern in as undemocratic a way as possible if it means getting their way. Because you're talking about courts no longer being judges, referees, looking at the law, looking at the facts, and offering an opinion on a case. Mm-hmm. You have them making law. We now are ruled by an oligarchy of 9 high priests in black robes, which is why everybody is having a conniption over this, the Supreme Court's decision not to institute a stay, because they are looking to the courts to institute law, to overrule law, which I find from a historical standpoint very interesting, because of the 27 grievances the colonies used to justify their separation from Great Britain, the very first one was, listen, we passed these great and wholesome laws and the king simply overturns them. Mm-hmm. Where what we have today is you have states passing wholesome and just laws, and we have the courts overturning them. And now we have a progressive wing that has become so blatant to say, if we don't get our way in the legislature, right, we don't get our way in the courts, we will simply pack the courts, mm-hmm, so that we always get our way. We don't care what the people say. Self-government is dead.
Yeah.
It's going to be ruled by a few.
All right. Well, listen, there's a history of what you're talking about right now. That's not hyperbole. That really is the way they play the game here. Danielle, I got to get your impact on this packing the court business, because I think you're going to see more and more of this. And although there have been a couple of other instances in our historical past, as Paul points out, it's become very blatant in the Biden administration through the election and now to grab onto that power, if you will. What do you think happens with this?
Well, I think it's important to note that, number one, abortion is nowhere mentioned in the Constitution. And so the fact that the Supreme Court really just through history has started infringing on so many states' rights, so many individual rights through time, basically ruling on anything we can do or can't do, they decide. What happened to, you know, the American spirit of freedom? And so I think it's gotten really beyond. But as far as packing the court, I mean, I don't think that Joe Biden is going to have the votes for that. I mean, there's Manchin, there's Sinema, there are others who I don't think are going to go for that. And even so, I mean, he only has very little time in 2022. It's not looking good for him in the midterms. I mean, he's pulling way down. Afghanistan, even jobs, he's really going down. Same with Kamala Harris. And so he would have to get more Democrats in there in 2022 in order to even do this. So I don't think that it will happen, but I do think the Democrats, they're going to keep pushing for it, especially the, you know, far left AOC squad type of Democrats. So hopefully we can put that off at least until we get back in power. And the thing is, if they do pack the court somehow, when we get back in office, well, we're going to do the same thing, because we have to then play the same game. And so the court then really becomes gangsterized and weaponized as a political game. And it's then really no longer about the Constitution or about having an actual Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a great talk. I mean, this has really surpassed my expectations. Really, really good. Danielle D'Souza Gill and Paul Engel, tremendous thank you. And entire program was just terrific. Yeah, I want to mention to you about, again, Danielle's book there. You can get that in the America Out Loud bookstore, or surely right on. We've got it also on the front page here if you're listening to Viewpoint this Sunday here. It's called The Choice, The Abortion Divide in America. Take a look at that as well, my friends, and check it out there. Paul as well, his book, The Constitution Study, you'll get that also. That'll be on the front page, and that's in the bookstore as well. Please check that out. And his show, The Constitution Study, weekdays at 4 p.m. If you want to learn about the Constitution and learn from someone who doesn't really play politics with it, Paul's your guy. Just check him out at 4 p.m. daily, and you'll get a good sense of where he's at here. A lot going on in the country, my friends. Catch me during the week again on The Voice of a Nation, 6 p.m., 10 p.m. is the encore. We've got a packed agenda coming at you here. Thank you, as always, for being with me on the mission here. It's time. to get involved and get loud.